Hello and welcome to the Unite podcast, the B2B podcast by Europe's sustainable e-procurement platform, Unite. I'm your host, Sangeeta Nair, and I'm excited to bring you this 37th episode from Unite's Global Corporate Communications Department. Today, on this beautiful spring afternoon in April, we're diving into a topic that's incredibly important to us here at Unite: circular economy, the benefits and challenges of adopting it in today's world. It's a fascinating and evolving concept, and we've got a fantastic panel of experts here to share their insights and perspectives. So sit back, relax, and get ready to join us as we explore the ins and outs of the circular economy. Our guests today are Dr. Nadine Leder and Eva Winkler. Nadine Leder is a lecturer in Logistics and Operations Management at Cardiff Business School. Her research expertise is in circular economy and circular business models. She has gained practical knowledge by working in the logistics department of a company in Shanghai. Furthermore, she is a reviewer for a range of academic journals such as Supply Chain Management, an international journal, and Resources Conservation and Recycling Journal. Eva Winkler drives the sustainability initiatives for the Unite platform. She has been interested in sustainability and quality management topics since 2007. As the sustainability product manager at Unite, Eva continuously strives to improve the transparency and comparability of sustainability data of products and suppliers. So let's get started. If I may begin with you, Nadine, what is circular economy from your perspective, and where does such a regenerative model fit into our current economic systems?
Well, I mean, circularity in itself is sort of a systems change that we're currently undergoing. And there is, for me personally, there is not like one definition of circularity. So from an academic perspective, we've got over 114 different definitions of circular economy. But what it personally means for me is that we are sort of trying to feed material that is fit for the purpose of circularity into our supply chains. And then we also want to keep that material in the loop for as long as possible. So we're trying to minimize waste and the generation of waste by that. And that means we're trying to reuse, recycle, remanufacture, repurpose material and the products that we're producing. And I think it fits very nicely in our economic system at the moment because we can sort of look at it from different perspectives. So we do not have to, we're always looking at the product and closing the one loop, but we can look at multiple loops. And we can also think about opening the loop. So it's not just about the product that the business is producing. It's also about the byproducts that are generated. So we can open the loop and give that to different industry sectors. Or we can thinking about slowing down our loop. So is it possible to have product life extension, for example, repair and repurposing for purposes? Or then we can also like narrow the loop. So that means we can use less energy, less water, for example, when we're producing. So that's where I think it comes also out why there is not one set definition for me. It also depends like which sort of perspective you're taking.
Eva, so how do our business partners define circular economy?
So as Nadine just highlighted, there are over 100 definitions out there. Wow, no wonder that there are so many different views on circular economy. So when I'm talking to buy-side and sell-side customers of our platform, many hear circular and think of recycling, which is far away from closing the loops. But there are two very simple things. I remember from my study time at Vienna at the University of Natural Resources and Life Sciences. First, always having the product's life cycle in mind, really from cradle to cradle, and that not only from cradle to gate. And second, reuse is always better than recycling.
So Nadine, then given your expertise, what
do you think are the key differences between, let's say, a B2B and a B2C circular economy initiative? Could you highlight some challenges and barriers to implementing a circular economy, and how can they be really addressed?
Yeah, sure. I mean, in a B2B or B2C environment, you've got like completely different sort of end consumers. You've got on the one hand side the end consumers like us, basically, the three of us. Or in a business environment, you've got obviously the business. And there is, particularly with the end consumers, with us, it's that sort of behavior change that you need to enforce in some ways. Are we always happy to bring our bottles back when we have to pay the deposit? Or even like when we go in a restaurant, do we really want to know if they have got any circular approach behind it? So that's, I think, a challenge in itself with the different sectors. While it's in a B2B environment, there is sort of that nudge often from governmental bodies and institutions that sort of bring out laws and legislation there. In terms of the key challenges that I personally see is like reliability, quality, and scalability that you have got with material that is circling in the different loops. So particularly with quality, you need to think about what sort of quality is the material that you are getting, and that's particularly important when you think about industries such as the healthcare industry or the food sector, where you have to work after specific standards. And then also the scalability: do you get enough material back to be able to keep your production alive? And then one of the other challenges that I think are there is the infrastructure, and that's particularly when we are thinking about small and medium-sized enterprises or entrepreneurs. They do often not know what material they can use for circular purposes, but if they know, they might have got difficulties in implementing it. They don't have the financial incentives there and the support to collect the material or to deliver their material. So those are challenges that I see. I think solutions is really like knowing the product and knowing the material and collaborating, and particularly collaborating with waste service providers or logistics service providers. They do have that infrastructure to collect the material or to distribute the material that you've got on site. And then it's a lot engaging with end consumers. But I think because we're also now in the era of artificial intelligence and AI and all of that, so I think these material passports that we're discussing now that are linked to blockchains, they might help a lot in terms of tracking down where the material has gone to and what history the material has. So those are sort of solution approaches that I see for the B2B market in particular.
Yeah, knowledge sharing seems interesting, doesn't it? Nadine has a very fascinating perspective about knowledge sharing and engaging with end consumers. So do you suggest something similar? Do you share a similar opinion about engaging with B2B end users, Eva?
I was just thinking that B2B end users must be engaged in a different way than B2C end users, because even so, they are personally very much engaged in sustainability. They have their constraints in their position. Buyers, for example, they need incentives for procuring more expensive but long-lasting products and concluding service agreements, rather than buying just the cheapest product. Manufacturers are engaged in eco-design. They invest a lot in integrating recycling materials in their products and packaging. For example, CUS tissues made of 100% post-consumer waste in the most energy and water-efficient way. They even have byproducts they're putting into soil conditioner for farming. That's so amazing, but it's still a single-use product. And of course, multi-use is not possible for all product categories. But most important, doesn't matter how much you invest in eco-design, there must be buyers that really buy these high-quality eco-design products. And if, for example, Nadine is talking about extended producer responsibility, yeah, this definitely helps by shifting the responsibility upstream towards the producer, but it's not only about the obligation of taking back products. The real challenge is to prolong the usage phase, to close the loops, and therefore special B2B services can be developed, very simple ones like offering spare parts and repair service or a tea refurbishment. So there's lots to do, and we have to be really innovative and encourage the B2B end users.
So thank you for your insight, Eva. Given this conversation that's ongoing right now, do you think that consumers and businesses may be incentivized? You know, you talked about governments and rules, but how do we incentivize them to, say, participate in such an initiative?
Nothing. Well, I mean, there is, yeah, so, well, I mean, there is loads of different sort of incentives out there. And I think we all know the most dominant ones, the monetary incentives when we've got our deficit return scheme and we need to bring back our bottles. Here in the UK, we're just about to implement that. I know Germany and other countries in the world have already got that system and we're familiar with it. But then there is also additional fines and charges that are out there that sort of, I don't want to say pressurize, but sort of nudge organizations in terms of like not putting their material into landfill, their landfill charges for it. But I think another way is positive reinforcement. And I think we underestimate that a little bit at the moment. I've just seen it when you go to cafes nowadays, they've always got that. Some of them have got the sign saying reusable cups welcome, or you can get a little discount when you bring your reusable cup. So I think that's something that we shouldn't underestimate, like rewarding the businesses or the people that are already sort of applying circular practices. And I think when you look at incentives, campaigns that sort of where businesses and consumers alike can sort of relate to that, that's a way of like getting or engaging people. So there was a campaign here that said how many banana peels you need to have a light bulb on for X amount of time. So I think that's something that we then connect to, and then we are more willing to put our banana peels into the right waste bin so that we can recover energy from it. So those sort of incentives that are out there, I think, are important. And then I've mentioned it beforehand, is the material passports that are coming out that could help as well in terms of incentivizing the use of circularity.
So Eva, what role do you think consumers and businesses play in transitioning then to a circular economy?
We are all part of our economic system, and for this great transition, we need to be open-minded for new ways of value creation. This needs a radical paradigm shift. So we, in particular, Southside has to learn that they can earn money not only by producing and selling more and more new products, but they have business concepts of services, prolonging this product life cycles, closing material loops. Therefore, the material passport will be really an important step and also a big data point of transparency. And also there shall be examples like this product service systems, which shall be mentioned, really simple ones like managed printing services, which enables the company not to buy the whole printer, but to buy the services, and thereby the seller is required to reduce the material amount and invest in long-lasting machines and printers and everything. So this will be one point of view. And also the buy side has to change their ways of metrics and thinking dramatically, because they need to look at the total cost of ownership and not only on the short-term costs. So I think our business models have to change really, because it's not only the monthly and quarterly costs which shall be taken into account.
Yeah, that makes sense. But just sticking with this a little bit, Nadine, how do we encourage then suppliers? I know we have all of these rules, laws, and incentives in place, but is there something more that can be done that's universal, given that there are so many definitions, to circular economy? How do you think you can do that?
Well, I mean, it's one of the challenges that circular economy is sort of facing, and I think Eva, you've mentioned it really, really good. It's that paradigm shift that we need, and we can't really force any suppliers in going circular. That is the issue, and we had that a lot as well in small scale research projects where we have managed to implement circular practices with the manufacturers or with the tourism accommodations and tourism providers. But then they say things that they've outsourced or actions they've outsourced. The suppliers, it's difficult to get them on board then. So it's very tricky because ultimately you can't force anybody, but showing a bit the positive side on it and what you gain actually. And I think companies have to go with the time. If you're not on board with sustainability now, you're facing a huge problem there. And I think because when you're dealing with suppliers, you're looking more at the procurement perspective there. So I think you need to do that change from the traditional procurement way of a more collaborative mindset, because that is what circularity is about. And there is a lot of frameworks out there that help sort of how you can procure in a circular way. If you are touching up on the waste hierarchy in terms of like we're reducing, we're reusing, we're recycling, but there's also one out very detailed actually from the Ellen MacArthur Foundation where you go into what needs do we have, so knowing the product, and we need to tender, we need to go to the market, and then the contract management. But it is one of the challenges, and I think that's the behavior change and the whole change that Eva has mentioned beforehand that we sort of need to get going.
I totally agree. The competition for green markets is growing, and buyers want to report also on the green spend and everything. So we need common key metrics for circular economy first. But if we are looking on a positive perspective, what can we do? It's all about partnerships. It's connecting the buy side and the sell side on these topics, so that the sellers really invest in this long-term relationships by adding services, consultancies. Do you really have this demand on this product? Can we all add in, for example, repair your products? Can we substitute your office furniture by adding some aspects, by combining products, by repairing them, making them more, in totally, really this consultancy aspects. And on the other hand, so the buyers can invest in these partnerships by selecting long-term partners and suppliers and paying for the services. So make them valuable also on the economic point of view.
So Nadine, just so knowledge sharing seems to be a big part of this, right? And does it mean then that there are already are there I don't know, agencies in place, or is there like a repository where you could go and you could get all of this knowledge sharing? Is there something that you would recommend, like where there is something?
Well, I mean, there is not really like an agency that I know of that goes and sells the knowledge. Knowledge sharing is more like within your sector, but also looking a bit further ahead from your sector and see what they are doing. There is a lot of platforms out there, for example, that where you can look up your waste or your resource that you've got, and then you know where who needs which resource, so you can open up the loop.
For me, most valuable source of knowledge is the exchange with practical partners, business partners, who are telling from their experiences what we can do, how we can start, how we can close the loops, and make it possible what seems impossible sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's actually a good buzzword. It's like the exchange with the like-minded people. But I think it's also looking out for we've got a lot here in the UK with the councils and the non-profit organizations mm-hmm. that are helping you a lot in terms of realizing, and even if you need to apply for fundings and that. So they are very knowledgeable because they've got their circular experts, and then you don't have to be the expert in circularity. So you can sort of approach them, and then yeah, obviously the exchange with like-minded people in your industry, also other industries.
Oh, time flies, doesn't it? Well, we are coming to the very end of this very insightful session. And I have one last question for the pair of you, since you're passionate about the topic, and I'm sure it would interest our listeners to know. Could you tell us what you're putting your heart and time into these days? Maybe Nadine, you could go first.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, there's sort of three main projects I'm putting my heart and mind into. One has just finished. So one was a bigger EU project that looked at the tourism and leisure sector at the coastal area of England, France, Netherlands and Belgium. And we've helped little SMEs and entrepreneurs to apply circular practices, and we're now that knowledge that we've gained, we would like to give it further to other organizations in the tourism and leisure sector. The other project that we've started now is very linked to the public value ethos that Cardiff Business School has got. So what we want to do is we not only want to create like economic value, we also want to, the public value ethos includes the social aspect as well. And we're looking at food supply chains, because at the moment a third of the food that is created and flows through the supply chain is lost. And I've just read an article today that 80 million items food items are discarded every week in the UK by us end consumers. So I think I was pretty shocked. So I think putting an emphasis there and looking into the food supply chain and how we can also educate the society, give something back. And then the last project is because I'm working with the university, so the students are very, very, it's very centered. And I want to equip the students with the knowledge about circular economy and about sustainability, because they are going out in a year or two and they are the ones that are leading them, the companies and the organizations. And it's really nice to teach them the theoretical background, but it's also good to engage with companies. And we've got to make a space where they can like physically see how you can live circular economy. And that's a great thing. So those are the three things that are very, very close to my heart at the moment.
So having heard you speak, I think your students are definitely in good hands, Nadine.
Thank you.
and Eva, what about you? What are your plans?
First of all, I want to mention, because you talked about the food chain, I engage very much in a local food sharing initiative in my hometown. That's very near to my heart. From a more professional perspective, I love to meet manufacturers completely into eco-design approaches, such as B-Office with their cradle-to-cradle certified earth collection boards, because these holistic approaches, they really impress me. And also to cooperate with manufacturers to integrate circular economy data points in the e-catalogs, of course, because we want to highlight this refillable, repairable and refurbished products. And we need these data points like made for disassembly to make it visible on our platform. And what I like very much is to cooperate with suppliers and connect them to buyers in the business shops with very innovative suppliers like BBNet, closing the loops with refurbished IT. And at the same time, as you mentioned before, Nadine, they are supporting local economy and adding a social value, which is really of great importance. Because of regional resilience in the time of crisis, or climate toner, where I learned, for example, the difference between refilled toners and rebuilt toners. That's was really interesting because refill is just empty and refill, but rebuild it's really to empty, to replace cap parts, to refill, and to quality check. And I learn a lot in these corporations, and I love to highlight those business shops. I think we all should learn for more from each other, and we shall highlight the high quality of rebuilt products in general, because the business-to-business partners, they need the assurance that the quality is constant. And we are quite good in these aspects already.
I'm definitely calling you after this, Eva. I think we should meet often. I should learn. There's so much more to learn. So thank you. As we come to the end of this episode, we hope our conversation has shed light on the complexities and potential of the circular economy. And I hope it inspires us to move away from this take, make, waste kind of consumerism. At Unite, we believe connecting the economy with sustainable business practices is the key to building a better future. Thank you, Eva and Nadine, once again for sharing your expertise and insights. To learn more about our e-procurement platform, visit unite.eu. You can also write to us at podcast@unite.eu. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Join us again next time for more insightful conversations at the Unite podcast. Bye for now.